Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. You're confident when it comes to your work and life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same confidence when it comes to refinancing your existing mortgage or buying a home. It lets you understand all the details so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This week, a baseball field shooting, Sessions testifies, and crackdown on Cuba. Chaos when a gunman opened fire on lawmakers practicing for a congressional ball game. Louisiana Congressman Steve Scalise was gravely injured. Here's the call for help.
We need medics. We got a suspect right by the baseball field in front of the YMCA. There's also a victim down in the baseball field.
Democratic Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon pressed Attorney General Jeff Sessions about the former FBI Director James Comey's comments on Sessions' decision to recuse himself from the Russia investigation.
Mr. Comey said that there were matters with respect to the recusal that were problematic and he couldn't talk about them. What are they?
Why don't you tell me? They are none, Senator Wyden. There are none.
And President Trump is planning new restrictions on travel and trade with Cuba. Florida Senator Marco Rubio weighed in on Facebook Live.
The goal of these policies is very simple. We want to empower and we want to strengthen the Cuban people without strengthening the Cuban military, which controls a significant percentage of their economy.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Nancy Cordes, John McCormick, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. In the wake of the ball field shooting, will the tide turn on our country's deep partisan divide? Will it get worse? And what do you expect from Special Counsel Robert Mueller? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Nancy Cordes, congressional correspondent for CBS News. Nancy Cordes, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Also with us from Washington is John McCormick, senior writer at the Weekly Standard. John, it's great to have you here.
Great to be here.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Nancy, and John.
Here was the news. As we began to learn it, Republican Representative Mo Brooks of Alabama talked with CNN after the Alexandria shooting, the baseball field shooting, describing what he saw.
I was on deck, about to hit batting practice on the third base side of home plate, and I hear a loud bam. And I look around, and behind third base and the third base dugout, which is cinder block, I see a rifle. And I see a little bit of a body, and then I hear another blam, and I realize that there's an active shooter.
An active shooter, absolutely. House Majority Whip Scalise in big trouble, critical condition in the day after that time. President Trump took to the airwaves, said, let's have unity in this country.
We may have our differences, but we do well in times like these to remember that everyone who serves in our nation's capital is here because, above all, they love our country. We can all agree that we are blessed to be Americans, that our children deserve to grow up in a nation of safety and peace, and that we are strongest when we are unified and when we work together for the common good.
The president with his message there, and one more, his Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona witnessed the shooting. He was there, was in the congressional ballgame that went ahead last night. Before the game, he said the tenor of political discourse in this country must change.
I've tried, but I can do better in a lot of areas. We too often ascribe the worst motives to our opponents, and that comes out, that's reflected in the speeches we give, in what we write, and the way we act. And we can't do that anymore. We just can't.
Nancy Cordes, you're there covering Congress. How has this rippled through the ranks of Congress members this week?
It has really shaken them, Tom, for so many reasons. First of all, I think that they initially thought that Steve Scalise was in much better shape than he now appears to be. And so that has really been a blow, because initially what they were hearing was he was hit in the hip, but he's going to pull through and he'll be fine. And now what they're hearing is that he is still in critical condition, although he does seem to have improved lately. But it's going to be a very long hospitalization, a very long recovery. This bullet pierced internal organs. It fragmented when it entered his body, and it didn't exit. So, you know, they're really sort of recalibrating their expectations, and they're very troubled about the long road that he has ahead. Beyond that, you know, concerns for their own safety resurface. It's something that's always in the back of their mind. They know that they are public figures, and that they are often lightning rods. There are people who feel very strongly about the issues that they espouse. And so, you know, it's something that they live with and that they know is always could be a problem. And yet they try to just go about their daily lives. And something like this reminds them that they and their staffers, that's a concern I heard about a lot this week, is not just them, but their staffers are on the front lines and can be targets for any deranged person out there who has an issue with them.
John McCormick, how deep does the message, the warning signal of this shooting go? We are no strangers to political violence in this country, much less than in some others, thank heavens, but plenty of our own. Do you anticipate or see the beginnings of people thinking, wait a minute, we're topping out here on the vitriol, the partisan divide, we have to tone this down, as Jeff Flake was saying there? Or is that a, you know, the sentiment of a few days in the aftermath of a shock?
You know, it's always hard to predict. I think for the good of the country, the good of civility, I hope people become more civil with less vitriol. I actually am encouraged by the fact that I don't think that people are really trying to pin this necessarily on the other party as we've seen in the past. I think after Congresswoman Gabby Giffords was shot back in 2011, you did see someone like Bernie Sanders blame this on rhetoric, whereas now you've seen both sides sort of come together and say, you know, this is an awful thing, we deplore it. You saw Bernie Sanders say that this was a Bernie Sanders supporter who, you know, asked, are these Republican congressmen before he shot them? You've seen both parties, that they, for the most part, behave civilly. You know, hyperbole is something that has always been a part of American politics. I mean, going back to the founding, you can think more recently, you know, debates about health care, where you've got a Democratic ad showing a guy looking like Paul Ryan pushing a grandmother off a cliff. You have Republicans who have said, of likened rationing that they see coming from Obamacare to death panels. Now, that is, you know, incendiary rhetoric, but it is part of the American discourse and doesn't lead a person of sound mind to commit violence. You know, when is rhetoric actually to blame for violence? I would say in two circumstances. One, where someone's actually encouraging it, actually encouraging violence, and even on a lower level violence, when you see someone justifying using your fists against someone at a political rally, whether that was President Trump or whether that's liberal college students on college campuses trying to keep right-wing or conservative figures off. And the other case would be obviously when people, you know, tell demonstrable falsehoods, not hyperbole, but I mean, just think through history, you know, lynchings, pogroms have been based on horrible lies, on blood libels, things like that. But, you know, in general, we need a robust debate. I think that we should be more civil, but we should not try to, we should not lay the blame simply on a spirited and intense debate. This is a deeper problem. Obviously, we don't know the mental state of the shooter at this time. Well, that's always a question. You know, was the motive simply insanity, or was it something more akin to terrorism, which is politically motivated violence? You know, the KKK, ISIS, these are mostly, you know, people who are not suffering from a clinical medical condition who have chosen to use violence to achieve political ends. So far, early indications indicate this might be closer to the latter. I hope it's a one-off.
The president spoke of unity this week. Did he encourage violence in the campaign season? The second, you know, the Second Amendment, people can take care of that and the rest, John.
I just said that, you know, it's a lower level. I think when he said, you know, I'd like to see, you know, punch him in the face, stuff like that. I'd like to pay for his legal bills. You know, you can say it's a joke, but it's a disgusting joke. And it really is kind of winking and nodding at a lower level of political violence. And as on the other side, I'd say that we've seen this sort of political violence manifest itself on a few college campuses where, you know, someone like Charles Murray, who is a controversial scholar, but a respected scholar nonetheless, was brought in by a liberal professor at Middlebury College, and the Middlebury professor ended up in the hospital because she was attacked by students. And this is just nonsense, and it's disgusting. And we used to say in this country, you know, I may disagree with what you, I mean, I hate what you say, but I'll fight to the death for your right to say that. We seem to have gotten away from that, and we need to re-embrace the First Amendment.
Jack Beatty, you've been watching all this. Here we are, end of the week. What do you make of what transpired and how the country has taken it on board?
Well, I think Michael Gerson in the Washington Post this morning has the right metaphor. He says political violence acts like lightning illuminating the political landscape. And what we see in that illumination is the division, not just between politicians, but within the society, the growth of negative partisanship. I'm a Republican because I hate Democrats, not primarily because I like Republicans. The formation now of voting on the basis of group identity, the antipathy members of each party have for the other. Today, 45% of Republicans, 41% of Democrats believe the other party is a threat to the nation's well-being. In 1960, 5% of Republicans would have been upset by, you know, cross-party marriage of their children. Now, 49% of Republicans, 33% of Democrats would be upset if their child married someone from another party. They quote, Ezra Klein, looking through this research, quotes one Stanford professor saying, "Political identity is fair game for hatred in a way that racial and gender identity are not."
Nancy, again, you're there in Congress, and I wonder if, I mean, it's only been a couple of days, but do we go right back to the well of hyperpartisanship? The habits must be so deeply ingrained at this point.
Well, it's interesting because some members say we really need to turn the microscope on ourselves and look at our own behavior. But you had a lot of them who said, you know, we think we're actually pretty civil to one another here on Capitol Hill. And yes, there are outliers and they get a lot of attention. But by and large, Congress is dictated by these sort of Victorian rules of respect and not going after someone personally. But, you know, what you see all around it is a different story. In campaigns, outside groups spending millions of dollars completely slash and burn to demonize their opponents. There are websites now that make money off of demonizing the other party and casting everything that they do in the worst possible light. And so, you know, members of Congress kind of get caught up in all of that. I would say for the most part, most of them do try to conduct civil discourse. Yes, they disagree emphatically with the other side, but you've got this whole atmosphere around them, and it's difficult for them to stay out of it altogether.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. With Rocket Mortgage, you can apply simply and understand fully so you can mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. The baseball field shooting, Robert Mueller's investigation turning to President Trump, new Cuba policy from the Trump administration, Jeff Sessions' testimony, indictments in Flint, Michigan, and word this week that Washington, D.C. issued arrest warrants for 12 members of the security detail of Prime Minister Erdogan of Turkey after a bloody encounter with protesters during an official state visit last month. Here's sound of that brawl last month. The U.S. going after Turkish security guys now. We'll see how that goes in international relations. We'll see how we work out our own problems right here at home. We're looking at that baseball practice shooting. Robert Mueller, you can join us. Beyond Mueller, are you confident our attorney general? He testified this week. Jeff Sessions is open and honest and on the job. You can join us. What do you make of Michigan officials indicted over Flint, Michigan? Tightening up on Cuba, right way to go. Nancy Cordes is with us, congressional correspondent for CBS News. John McCormick is here, senior writer at the Weekly Standard. Jack Beatty is with us, and lots of calls on the shooting. Jill in Franconia, New Hampshire. Jill, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. What happened on that baseball field this week was a horrendous act, and I in no way want to excuse what happened, but I have to say that I see a lot of anger and frustration in this country right now, and there's an alarming lack of leadership and accountability from the White House and Congress that I think fuels this anger. And aside from the standard disagreement on the political issues, we have a president who, according to the Washington Post this morning, has lied 623 times since taking office, and yet the deputy White House press secretary said last week that the president is not a liar.
Hey, may I ask you, Jill, a point taken on that? Yes. You say there's a lot of anger and frustration in this country right now. Now, the shooter, the alleged shooter, was a Bernie Sanders volunteer. Do you mean on the left? Do you mean on the right? Do you mean all over?
I mean all over, personally and amongst the people I talk to, I would say on the left, but I'm sure, you know, I see that on the other side as well.
I mean, your state voted for Donald Trump. What does that tell you?
We actually voted for Hillary Clinton by a hair.
Oh, sorry, of course.
Very close.
Yeah.
Yes. But it was very, and I see it even in my neighborhood, the anger on both sides.
Yeah.
But, you know, from my perspective, I just really see it from outside of the political issues, just this lying and the no accountability, and then the Republican leadership saying things like, well, he's new at this, and gee, I wish he'd stop tweeting so much.
Yeah.
But, you know, the President of the United States has no credibility, and I don't feel like the Republican leadership is doing anything to hold him accountable. And
Jill, I appreciate your call. Let us pick it up, if we may. John McCormick, what about, I mean, here we have one man from Bellevue, Illinois, but Jill is not wrong that across the country we've seen plenty of expressions of anger and frustration, and she's just not confident Washington is at grips with that. I mean, part of what people said about the election of Donald Trump was, well, he represents one broad swath of anger and frustration. So here's its chance to be worked out. Now you've got it from the other side with Jill and her circle. Is this in some way an indication that we're just not on top of addressing the country's problems, John?
No, I would say, I mean, Jill and liberal resistance marchers have every right to be angry and oppose this president, just as the Tea Party were angry and they marched and they opposed the last president. They campaigned in elections, but they didn't resort to violence, and there can't be any connection between the two of those things. I do think, you know, it's interesting that we're not really talking about guns in this moment, because this gun was purchased in Illinois, one of the most, you know, liberal states in the country legally, and the weapon wasn't even, you know, it wasn't even banned under the 1994 assault weapons ban. So it is interesting, you know, just to show you that, you know, this kind of carnage can be, this kind of havoc can be unleashed by a gun that no one's really even proposed banning before. And if not for the heroism and the bravery of the two Capitol Hill police officers on scene, you know, there could have been several congressmen and senators assassinated this week.
Jack, what about the anger and frustration Jill's talking about? And of course, it's on the other side of the aisle as well. How do we start to get our hands around that to sort of bring the temperature down? Part of it is just making nicer, talking more nicely to one another. But that's not all. There are real issues here.
There are. And I think in terms of talking nicely, I think the president struck the right note in that speech, after the shooting that we quoted from. That's the kind of thing we need to hear more of from him, from other politicians. But there's also this possibility, Tom, that the politicians understand that in a polarized polity as ours is, where the primary nature of group identity is political affiliation, solutions may not be the what it's all about. What it may be all about is mobilizing that antipathy, is making people.
What do you mean?
Well, in other words, rather than working to somehow have a compromise or bring both parties together, no, you go just in the opposite direction, because you need to keep mobilizing what is that primary motive now in American politics: negative partisanship. I don't want anything to do with those terrible people from the other party. So solutions, in other words, to look to politics as our caller did to Jill did to for solutions, maybe the wrong place to look.
And yet that's supposed to be where we work out our differences and our difficulties. Tom in Brunswick, Georgia. Tom, you're on the air.
Thank you. It's going to be very curious to watch what happens as a result of this shooting, any actions that are taken, as opposed to the lack of actions that were taken after the school children in Sandy Hook were killed.
What kind of actions, Tom? What kind?
I'm talking about banning tighter gun controls. I'm talking just banning open carry. I'm talking about it seems like there's a difference of concern when it's a public servant, when it's somebody who suddenly seems to have a higher profile and has a political profile.
Let us pick it up there, Tom, and I'll put it to Nancy. She's right there in Congress. A peep or more or less of talk about tighter gun control after these shootings and a House leader down?
A peep, but not much more than that. You know, certainly it's a debate that Democrats would dearly love to have, but even they seem to be quite discouraged because they have mounted this effort before and never gotten anywhere. And you even had some of the leaders in that effort say, you know, if we can't get stricter gun laws when two dozen kids are gunned down, it's not going to happen now. And it's, you know, you've got the reality is that Republicans control the House and the Senate. And there were some Republicans who said this week, well, you know, I'd like to be able to bring my gun to Congress. I'd feel safer if I could do that. Or perhaps if we had been able to have more guns out there at the ball field, we would have taken the shooter down quicker. So you have the exact same divide between the two parties that you have always had. And it makes progress on this particular issue even more difficult than most.
Guns in Congress. Bad enough when we had the caning way back when. I don't know about the guns on the hip. Mike in Columbus, Ohio. Mike, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I have endured discussions about the Second Amendment for years now, and the argument has always been that the Second Amendment is our defense against a tyrannical government. My question for the Second Amendment proponents has always been, well, who decides? What's the difference between a legitimate exercise of a constitutional right and a random act of violence? And I dearly hope that in the light of this week's events that we will revisit what we've been saying about the Second Amendment, and if we are in fact committed to a nonviolent political environment, that we'll take steps to institute that.
You mean you think John Hodgkinson might make the argument, this is my defense against a tyrannical government, the shooter at the ball field?
I personally would never make that argument, but I've heard from many, many proponents of the Second Amendment who keep saying that our only defense ultimately against a tyrannical government is arms.
Yeah. Mike, we've got it. John McCormick, who decides then when the moment has come? Maybe John Hodgkinson thought this is the moment. This is the time to pull out the gun.
Well, he's wrong. You know, America is not Nazi Germany. It wasn't Nazi Germany under Barack Obama, and it's not Nazi Germany under Donald Trump. And anyone resorting to violence is evil and a wicked person.
Who makes the call? You know, if that's the argument that ultimately we need the Second Amendment for exactly that, to oppose a tyrannical government, then the question is, well, okay, who decides?
Yeah, well, we are supposed to be a country of adults, of a moral and decent people, and democracy is unfit for any mother. I'm paraphrasing John Adams there. And so, the people, there is an expectation in a republic and a democracy that the people will exercise their freedom in a right way. I mean, Mo Brooks, the congressman from Alabama, we just quoted him earlier, had a clip of him. You know, he had just survived an assassination attempt, and within an hour, I think he was asked a question about the gun control issue. Does this make you think anything different? And he gave an extremely eloquent defense of saying, listen, you know, I'm not going to curtail the Fourth Amendment because it gives criminals some protections. I'm not going to curtail the Second Amendment because it lets people commit these horrendous acts of violence, one that he had just been through. And again, we can have a reasonable debate about the limits of that and whether we should limit the size of certain weapons or the cartridges or the magazines. Or
availability to the mentally disturbed.
Well, of course, and people were mentally disturbed, and felons, it's illegal for those people to get weapons, and
well,
we should take greater precautions and greater and pass more laws to make it more difficult.
But that's been eased under the Trump administration, the restrictions on the those are the record of mental problems getting weapons.
On Social Security, I think that was I don't have the facts exactly with me right now, but I'm not sure. I think that might have been a little bit misreported.
That's the way it came across to me. A lot of people still just staring at those images from the ball field and thinking, where are we? Where are we headed? I want to turn to Robert Mueller's investigation and multiple reports this week of its expansion. First, that it would look at the president and obstruction of justice. It would look at the business dealings of those around the president. It would look at Jared Kushner, Donald Trump tweeting earlier in the week, witch hunt. And again today, as he conceded that he's being investigated, I'm quoting his tweet this morning, I am being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director. Witch hunt. The United States president writes here again. I don't know. Here was Republican Senator John Thune, South Dakota, with MSNBC yesterday, saying that Special Counsel Robert Mueller should be allowed to conduct his investigation. Here's Thune.
It's not a witch hunt. No, I mean, I think that, you know, he's got a job to do. We all understand that. And I think it's in everybody's best interest if we let him do his job and we do ours.
Nancy Curtis, what do we know about what's under investigation now? We've had reports in The Washington Post and elsewhere. What's the full range appear to be of Mueller's investigation? What does that indicate?
Well, the president now appears to have confirmed that he is under investigation by the special counsel. And so before he tweeted, all we had was this report from The Washington Post, which everyone was trying to match, that the special counsel was indeed looking at whether the president had committed obstruction of justice when he fired the FBI director and later said that Russia was on his mind when he did it, which would be an indication that he was trying to somehow slow down or stop the Russia investigation. And, you know, you even had the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, putting out a very cryptic statement on Thursday night saying, don't believe anonymous sources, you know, they can't always be trusted, even suggesting that perhaps the officials that were being quoted anonymously by The Washington Post might even be foreign officials. And so that was kind of a head scratcher and sent a message to some that maybe this Washington Post report was flawed in some way.
And this
but
is
then
the Deputy Attorney General, but then the president
right?
comes.
But then the president himself tweets that I'm being investigated. And so that seems to sort of confirm that it is, in fact, taking place. And now you have suggestions that the deputy attorney general is saying that he may have to recuse himself from this investigation, which would be yet another signal that there is an obstruction of justice case going on. Because remember, it was Rosenstein who sent that memo to the president arguing that Comey had made mistakes as FBI director and probably needed to go. That's the memo that the White House initially cited as the reason for the president's decision to fire Comey the next day.
Jack, what do you make of this? Vice President Pence now lawyering up with a personal attorney. These reports of how wide the investigation goes, the president himself saying yes, and Nancy Curtis saying Rob Rosenstein himself, that now the deputy attorney general may have to also recuse. What do you see here, Jack?
Yes, and perhaps today's tweet from the president, I'm being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire that director, witch hunt, that's aimed at Rosenstein. And, you know, a couple of legals I just saw on CNN were saying, is the president trying to set the predicate for firing Mr. Rosenstein?
Well, what does he mean? It's really Mueller who's doing the investigation. Rosenstein was the one who named him, right?
But I think the way these people were taking it was that it was the Rosenstein memo that Nancy alluded to. That was the president was saying that was the reason he fired him. In other words, that was the ostensible reason. So they were taking it to mean that it's pointing at the deputy. So we just don't know. We just don't know. But, you know, you have to have some sympathy for the White House staff. I mean, people there, you mentioned lawyering up the vice president. Well, one person this week said, dear God, keep him away from Twitter. That's a person in the White House. And the White House defense is this is all politics. They it came out that three lawyers that have been hired by Mr. Mueller have made contributions to the Democrats. Someone in the White House told CNN he has to have a staff of virgins, end quote. And Newt Gingrich takes that up and goes a little bit further. He says there's a deep state here going on, a permanent state of massive bureaucracies that go out of their way to attack the president. They're fighting to keep hold of their power. That's what the deep state does, create a lie, spread a lie, fail to check it, and then deny they were behind the lie. Even Sean Spicer has picked up this deep state idea. This is sort of the last ditch. You know, if the president is at 36% of public approval, deep state rhetoric, maybe one wonders that whether that's going to hold at 36%.
John McCormick, I don't know if there's a staff of virgins to be had in Washington, D.C., but how do you look at this where the president on the one hand is saying this whole thing is a witch hunt? On the other hand, apparently, you've got the investigation rolling ahead on multiple fronts here. What do you make of that gap, John?
Well, you know, I think someone needs to tell the president that these, you know, special counsels can kind of spin out of control. Remember, Bill Clinton was impeached for perjury and obstruction of justice in connection with the investigation of Monica Lewinsky. That investigation began with Paula Jones. If Bill Clinton had nothing to do with Paula Jones, and we know that he settled that sexual harassment claim, it didn't matter, because once these investigations get going, you can't obstruct justice, you can't perjure yourself. So,
and it doesn't mean they're out of control. It could mean they're following the evidence where it needs to be followed, but we'll pick it up. John McCormick with the Weekly Standard, Nancy Cordes, CBS News, Jack Beatty. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. In other news this week, a fire ripped through a high-rise apartment building, public housing in London, killing 30 people and gravely injuring more than 70.
A nighttime inferno.
Oh my God, they're screaming!
Hundreds trapped inside. As a 24-story apartment building disintegrates.
Fred Warmbier, whose son was sentenced to 15 years hard labor in North Korea, said he doesn't expect to ever know why his son was freed this week. Otto Warmbier returned home in a coma.
I don't know that we're ever going to find the answer. They did not do this out of the kindness of their hearts. North Korea doesn't do anything out of the kindness of their hearts.
And Adam West, who played Batman in the 1960s TV show, died this week at 88.
Here, take my bat radio. I looked it up this morning. That class of missile receives on a wavelength of 164.1.
We're looking at a week in the news with John McCormick of the Weekly Standard. Nancy Cordes, she covers Congress for CBS News. Jack Beatty is here, and you can join us. What do you see? Is Special Counsel Robert Mueller just doing his job? What's your confidence level in Attorney General Jeff Sessions? Is President Trump right to tighten up again on Cuba to crack down on undocumented parents of American citizen immigrant children? And what do you think of young American Otto Warmbier pulling down a poster in North Korea and sent home in a coma? What do you think of Megyn Kelly putting Alex Jones on national television Sunday night? Carol in New Orleans, thank you for calling, Carol. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Yeah, I think Robert Mueller will do an outstanding job. He knows how a democracy operates. As a former head of the FBI, he's going to be fair and balanced and let the chips fall where they may to save our democracy. This is the most important thing. Laws of the nation and fairness and just getting this country straight on the right track again, because right now we're off the rails.
Carol, I appreciate your call. John McCormick, what about this week? We heard attacks on the character of Robert Mueller, kind of maybe looking to undermine him as he wades into all of this. What kind of weight does he carry at this point in Washington, and what kind of impact do you see? I mean, after all, in the end, he just says to Congress, I guess, here's what I found. Do with it what you will.
Yeah, I mean, he is in a very incredibly powerful and important role. You know, you saw a few weeks ago, everyone was praising him left and right about his integrity, his professionalism, and you sort of seen a 180 by some, not all, of President Trump's defenders sort of beginning to question Mueller's integrity, and I think they're just a little worried about where this investigation is going to go.
I mean, you say it may spin out of control, but it is his job. It's, following it to its conclusion is not spinning out of control, is it?
Yes, and I was not trying to say that, mm-hmm. you know, that Kenneth Starr was wrong to inquire into the Lewinsky situation and that Clinton was wrong to obstruct justice and commit perjury in that thing that was not quite related or wasn't originally under investigation when the Paula Jones case was open. The same way, Trump could be completely innocent of anything regarding Russia. Maybe his campaign staff was up, but he could be personally innocent. But if he tried to obstruct justice in the investigation of Michael Flynn, well, that's a crime.
It could go in a lot of directions, Jack. I mean, now, if indeed the special counsel is looking into the business dealings of Trump associates, that looks like a very, very wide mouth can of worms.
It sure does, and his son-in-law is, of course, one of them. And the last sentence of the Times report on this yesterday said, the suspicion is that any cooperation with Russian officials would most likely have been in exchange for some kind of financial payoff, and that there would have been an effort to hide the payments, probably by routing them through offshore banking centers. That's the primary counterintelligence investigation on the financial crimes front. And apparently, one of the people that Mueller has taken on is an expert in just this kind of jurisprudence.
That's a wide swath for investigation if they're going there. Van in Raleigh, North Carolina. Van, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Look, I find myself in a very difficult position here. I didn't vote for the Trump team, and I certainly find it difficult just to call and feel like I'm supporting him. But it seems to me that there is a concerted effort, you know, from the last administration and people within the government to delegitimize what was a fairly elected official. I mean, and that official is the President of the United States. So everything that I'm seeing, and I've got a college degree, I've got a master's degree in national security studies.
Yep.
Yeah, and it just, you know, appears to me from a guy who's taken a, you know, I've got no horse in the race sort of view that there is a lot of people that are just trying to delegitimize the current administration.
Van, let us pick it up, and I appreciate your call. Nancy Cordes, respond to that. And where, I mean, Robert Mueller is no slouch. If he's investigating, he'll come out with material. It may be exonerating, it may not, but ultimately Congress decides whether or not to move toward impeachment with that, I guess. That's what all of this sets up or does not set up. So within Congress, do you feel a readiness to take this where it goes? Do Republicans share Van's view that this is straight up a move to delegitimize a fairly elected president?
Well, first of all, I would point out that there was a robust effort to delegitimize the previous president by the other side as well.
He wasn't a born a U.S. citizen, the whole birther line, which was Trump
Donald
himself's
Trump was
line.
One of the leaders of that effort. And I would also point out that the House and the Senate are led by Republicans. And so you've got a Republican at the helm of the Senate Intelligence Committee investigation, and you've got a Republican at the helm of the House Intelligence investigation. You've got the president's pick running the Justice Department. You've got
recused,
who has now recused. But, you know, you do have a lot of Republicans and Trump appointees in positions of power who have either begun these investigations actively themselves or have said, you know, yes, we think it's important to get to the truth. You do have many Republicans who say, look, I think that there's no evidence of collusion here. I don't believe that anything happened, but I do want an investigation to take place just so that, you know, it can be done properly, it can be closed, and we don't have any questions anymore. But then, as your caller pointed out, you have others who say, well, I'm very worried about where this is going to lead. And could this just be open-ended and an investigation that goes on for years? And if you sick someone like Robert Mueller on an administration, he's going to find something. So, you know, there is a lot of concern because once you open up this can of worms, as you said, you know, you just don't know where those worms are going to go. And no politician likes to feel that loss of control. But I will say that there are a number of Republicans, along with Democrats, who think that the president's actions, as you know, at least as it relates to Jim Comey, were at the very least improper and inappropriate and should be examined.
I mean, is control the question here, or is legality justice? Jeff Sessions in the hot seat this week and defiant at many points in his testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee. Here he was vehemently denying having worked with the Russians during the Trump campaign.
The suggestion that I participated in any collusion, that I was aware of any collusion with the Russian government to hurt this country, which I have served with honor for 35 years, or to undermine the integrity of our democratic process, is an appalling and detestable lie.
Jack, what did you take away from the Sessions testimony and the senator's questioning?
Well, I think we saw there a man who was just desperate to get in the good graces of his boss. The press has been full of reports about Mr. Sessions even at one point coming to Mr. Trump and saying, do you want me to resign? And why? Because the president is furious with Sessions for his recusal, for saying, I can have nothing more to do with this. He apparently did not run that by the White House. He did it because he was already dealing with his own cloud about not being candid about his connections with the Russian ambassador. And he is apparently just angry as Trump is at Comey, from what one reads, he's even angrier at his own attorney general. Hence the I don't recall, I don't remember, I can't. We have a protocol that no one seems to have written down that Justice Department, Executive Department employees, officials can't talk about conversations with the president. All this sort of factitious nonsense about that. All of this is an effort, I think, to, you know, please don't fire me.
Got to ask about Kamala Harris and her tough questioning of Jeff Sessions this week, interrupted by John McCain. You know, the witness should be allowed to answer the questions, but it's rare for one senator to interrupt another. And this has happened before, male senators interrupting the female attorney general of California as she pressed her case on NBC's Morning Joe Wednesday. Host Mika Brzezinski came out in defense of the California senator, Kamala Harris.
The differences between what is expected and what is allowed between men and women, even on the national stage when the cameras are on them and there should be at least an attempt at equality, is pathetic.
Nancy Cordes, you cover Congress. Is there some self-examination here among the guys who keep jumping on her questioning? Maybe the tough questioning was needed here. What are they doing horning in on her time?
I've not seen any evidence of that self-examination. You know, members of Congress are famous for badgering people who are testifying and interrupting them, men and women. It is a time-honored practice. John McCain himself has done it many times.
So why are they jumping on this woman, Kamala Harris, Senator, U.S.
Senator?
Draw
your own conclusions. You know, she's a former prosecutor, and she was grilling him. But you know what? There are a lot of former prosecutors in the Senate, and they don't typically get berated. And I'll point out, she wasn't just berated by McCain. She was, you know, also then told by the chair of the committee, Senator Burr, twice, not once, but twice, first with Comey, then with other administration officials, Coates and Rogers, when they testified. Yep. But yep. Then also with Sessions, that she, you know, needed to slow it down and give him a chance to answer.
Oh, boy. I want to go to Cuba policy. John McCormick, what do you read into the Trump administration rollback of a good portion, not all, but a good portion of the sort of loosening and opening of ties that the Obama administration had achieved with Cuba?
You know, I think you'd read that as a win for Marco Rubio. I mean, Marco Rubio has been a staunch proponent of freedom in Cuba, and he believes that keeping some of that pressure in place is key to ultimately, it's our only bargaining chip with them eventually. I know some people disagree with that, but I think that, you know, a lot of people criticize Marco Rubio, myself included, for ultimately supporting Donald Trump during the campaign. But this is an example where I think that he has had some success.
Art in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. What do you think, Art?
Well, I'm a lawyer. I've represented many U.S. travelers to Cuba in the past, and the National Lawyers Guild is prepared to do so in the future if need be. There's many ironies. One is last night NBC News reported that Cuba is cooperating with the U.S. in terms of challenging cybercrime. So at the same time that with all these reports about Russia's cyber attacks, Trump won't do anything, and now he's going to go down and try and vamp on Cuba. And that cooperation will probably disappear as a result. And the other irony is his policy, what he's announcing, is going to be corralling most U.S. travelers to Cuba into large, expensive groups where they'll be closely monitored, not by Cuba, but by the U.S. side, it's a U.S. sponsor. And they're going to deny them the right to stay in hotels. So a large group is not going to put people in 15 different private homes.
Art, it sounds like you've got a little bit of a dog in this fight, but what about Senator Rubio's point? We want more freedom in Cuba. This will give us leverage to help achieve it.
It's really kind of ironic. People should go to Cuba, see for themselves. I mean, there's lots of problems in Cuba, but compare that to Saudi Arabia or these other countries where Trump has no problem, whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, $100 billion military to Saudi Arabia. I mean, it has nothing to do with it.
Fair enough. Art, I appreciate your call. I want to turn to the Flint, Michigan story. And there we had indictments this week of state officials over the whole water crisis there. The Flint mayor, Karen Weaver, reacted to that news that Michigan Attorney General Bill Schuette was bringing charges, including manslaughter and obstructing justice against five Michigan officials, said it's time the officials who made decisions that led to the city's water crisis were held accountable.
This is terrible. This is terrible what's happened in the city of Flint. But we've wanted some accountability. We said we've had people who have lost their lives. In addition to what's happened with the lead poisoning, we've had people die of Legionella.
Jack Beatty, here's a heads up. I mean, yes, it's terrible what happened in Flint, but this is unusual in this country to see rather high-level officials with criminal charges. I'm not questioning the charges, but this is tough terrain.
Yes, the charges go right up to the current director of the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, and the attorney general speaks of their arrogance, that people would want to sweep this away, and that there are nameless, faceless bureaucrats who caused this, and no one is responsible. All that is outrageous, he said. And, of course, what he's talking about is an outbreak of Legionnaire's disease that followed in Flint after the water crisis, or concomitant with it, and that resulted in 12 deaths. And this goes right up the chain of people who were apparently just simply trying to cover it up because it would be embarrassing for their boss, the governor.
Nancy Curtis, that's tough accountability, criminal charges.
That's right. And I think, it probably came as a surprise to the people of Flint who felt that the suffering that they went through was largely ignored, pushed aside, and never thought that there would be any accountability for what happened.
Just a thought on Otto Warmbier coming home from North Korea in a coma after, what was his offense, pulling down a poster in North Korea? Terrible. Jack Beatty, his father, expressing pride in his son. Anger, disgust with North Korea, but also grateful to the Trump administration for getting his son home, even if late and in tough shape.
Yes, and critical of the Obama administration for basically saying, well, be patient, let's wait them out. And he said that was all just turned out to be a dodge because he was suffering and waiting wasn't going to do it. There had to be a big splash, so he went on Fox and Friends and rallied the Trump administration, and his son is home, but gruesomely injured.
Pulled down a poster, sent home from North Korea in a coma. Our sympathies to the Warmbier family outside of Cincinnati there. I want to thank all three of you for being with us this hour. John McCormick, senior writer at the Weekly Standard. Thank you very much for joining us today, John.
Thank you, Tom.
Nancy Curtis, congressional correspondent for CBS News. Always great to have you, Nancy. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And Jack Beatty, have a great weekend, sir. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Michael DeSocio, Brian Harzinski, Alina Mata, Camila Kerwin, Stefano Katsonis, Maeve Pagess, Sarah Platt, Allison Poli, Tanya Raleigh, James Ross, and Gretchen Voss. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.